We are continuing to study the article Matan Torah, the Revelation of Godliness, item 7, from the book Kabbalah LaMatchil, Kabbalah for Beginners, page 113. You can also find the article on the site. Baal HaSalam wrote this article in order to explain what the wisdom of Kabbalah is to people who did not know anything about it. It was his first appeal to the people. And why did he start all that? The Creator, with respect to the creatures, appears through His only attribute, which is love. He created the creature so that the creature would reach His state, the best, highest state. Meaning, we have to reach that attribute of love. But because the Creator wants the creature to be independent, as He is, as the Creator Himself is, so you have to put the creature under conditions where he would discover the attribute of love, the attribute of bestowal, on his own, and will acquire it, understand it, and work with it independently with all his power, his strength, just like the Creator Himself. So on the one hand, from the very beginning, we are in an opposite state, completely opposite state from the attribute of love, of bestowal, and our goal is to reach it. So, when we ask what is the Torah, what is the purpose that one should reach, our sages explain to us, the ones who've already reached, who had already reached that degree of complete equivalence with the Creator, they explain that love thy friend as thyself is a great rule in the Torah, meaning it contains all the corrections, all the situations. The best possible state is when you reach the attribute of love. And Baal HaSalam explains that this attribute is acquired slowly. And not the creature entirely, but for that purpose the creature is divided into a great many parts. The creature is called the soul of Adam HaRishon. It divides into many parts, particular souls, which then clothe bodies in this world. And because the soul clothes in a body, it loses its spiritual attribute completely, and the body dominates, and the person feels only his body, his five senses, and what he perceives through the five senses. So this way, he's got an independent place or a state, and from that state he can then acquire the attribute of love, of bestowal, by himself, and gradually bring himself to resemble the Creator. Also, the creatures, who as of today are about, 6-7 billion, it doesn't matter to how many parts the soul is divided, it's always divided according to the need for correction. So the greater the avyut, and the avyut grows gradually, from Shoresh to Aleph to Bet to Gimel to Dalet, through humankind's development. So accordingly, the parts that should correct the avyut grow in number. Had the avyut been smaller, 3,000 or 4,000 years ago, the number of parts that needed to correct the avyut was also smaller, because not that many people carrying this harder avyut were needed. But when we come to a situation where we have avyut gimel or dalet, the greater avyut, as is appearing nowadays, we have to divide this avyut into a greater number of souls, particular souls or people, in which these souls dress, to make it easier to correct the greater avyut. That's why population grows in numbers. Humanity grows, multiplies. And the degrees, as we attain spirituality, become smaller to make it easier from state to state, and through multiplication of particular souls and multiplication of private situations that everyone goes, it's like a row of souls that goes, experiences degrees of evolution. So that's how we all reach that state called love, which actually this love indicates complete bestowal when one does not think of himself but of others, meaning each and every particular soul takes within it only what it needs for its own correction in order to serve all the other souls. Because that's the law of connecting all the souls in one system. Just like every cell in the body exists only in order to be included in the body. And that gives it its livelihood, its provision from the body, and it enjoys the flow of light, of life in the body. So the attribute of love is the attribute that connects all the parts together into one system and brings them to a state, the state of true life. So the condition by which all the souls were reconnected into the complete body of Adam HaRishon is love between them. And when they reach that love between or among them, so they come to equivalence of one with the Creator and become like Him, meaning they attain eternity and perfection, the status which is beyond our status, of course, our temporary and base state. So, Baal HaSulam says that in the souls, there's a difference between the structure, in the structure of the souls, the size of the souls, or of youth, quality. Just like in the body, we have wash, toch, sof, we have hands and legs and whatever, all kinds of parts, more important and less important parts, but all have to be in the complete body, but there's a difference which parts should be corrected first and which should be corrected later. We also see it in how when we watch a fetus grows in its mother's womb, which parts grow suddenly, this organ, like the liver, like the heart, the lungs, and the hands, and the legs, and then the brain, and then something else. It's a very complex and complicated system. And we learn all that from the wisdom of Kabbalah, from the spiritual roots. So similarly, a person evolves in the corporal world, but eventually, in the complete body, everyone's equal. Just like we learn that 10 sefirot must be 10 complete sefirot in height and width, and how they incorporate in one another. So at the end of correction, there is no difference between the sefirot. But until Gemar Tikkun, when they still evolve and grow, there's a difference which come first and which evolve later and are corrected later. So those souls that belong to Israel, straight to the Creator, the ones who want the Creator, who crave Him, are few and are gradually multiplying in numbers, growing in numbers until they, at the end of the evolution, at our time when we are at the time of the Messiah, as Kabbalists say, so now the desire is greater, and more people, meaning souls, feel an urge for correction, for spiritual evolution. Therefore, the means, the method of Kabbalah, the means to correct the souls, is passed on through a small number of souls that in the past were in a pure form, as it is written that through ancestral merit we have the Torah. What is the Torah? The means, because the light in it reforms. So because of ancestral merit we get it through pure souls. And those souls that were awarded because of their purity, they were awarded this method, and they are the ones called Israel, and they are the ones who should implement this method of correction on themselves and then pass this method on to the rest of the world. So the correction is gradual in quantity and quality, in number of souls, type of souls, and the completeness appears at Gemar Tikkun, at the end of correction. And until the end of correction, we have all kinds of differences and changes in the system between people in quantity and quality. So that's what Baal Sulam explains to us. So let's see what he says. We are in item 7. Item 7, the article is Matan Torah, the Revelation of Godliness, page 113, the book of Kabbalah Matchil. But here come the Kabbalists and ask, why were we not created in this high stature of adhesion to begin with? What reason did he have to give us this burden and labor of creation and the Torah and the mitzvot? And they replied, he who eats that which is not his is afraid to look at his face. Meaning that he who eats and enjoys the labor of his friend is afraid to look at his face, because by that he becomes more and more humiliated until he loses all humanness. Yes, all human form. And because that which extends from his perfection cannot be faulty, he gave us room to earn our own exaltedness through our work in Torah and mitzvot. These words are most profound, and I have already explained them in my book Panim Mirot Masbirot, Illuminating Face to the Tree of Life on the first branch, and in the book Talmud HaSfirot, the Study of Ten Sfirot, Inner Reflection, Part 1. Here, I will explain them briefly to make them understandable for all. Actually, we study it in the wisdom of Kabbalah itself. The Creator gives us pleasure, and also gives us the sensation of his self, bestowal, is who he is, the giver. And these two things that he gives from above, yes, the pleasure and who he is, the giver, they are felt in us. From the pleasure itself creates in us a desire to receive, to enjoy, and the giver, the sensation of the giver, creates in us the shame. It gives us a sensation that there is an upper one and there's me, the lower one, and the gap between the higher and the lower on the human degree induces shame. If it's less than the human degree, say an animate degree, animals don't feel shame. Dogs, cats get some food from us, a piece of bread or whatever, they're not ashamed. You can yell at them, you can do whatever you want, you can tell them shame on you. It's not going to help, right? People feel shame. They have to somehow compliment it, say thank you, or somehow they have to do something. It's the sensation of the difference between the upper and the lower, between the giver and the receiver. It's in our nature as an independent creation. Both these things, the desire to enjoy and the sensation of shame, are two separate things in us and that were created in us. And the more we evolve, of course we evolve within the desire, yes? What evolves? The avut. So we feel ourselves more as receivers compared to the giver, if the giver appears. If he doesn't appear, If the Creator doesn't appear, we have no shame. We also see with people, the more evolved they are, there's already some requirement to create some kind of relationship that one will not harm another, that each person somehow complements himself so as not to feel shame. That's why in modern society we have all kinds of systems for protection of people, protection of people's independence, freedom, rights, etc. These is because of our urge to defend ourselves against hurting our ego, which is so evolved that we already feel shame. Why did the Creator create reality this way? It would have been enough to create the will to receive and give the creature pleasure, let it enjoy. No, shame is exactly what helps us and gives us the possibility of eventually being like Him. Shame evolves in a person gradually. Accordingly, one feels the Creator, feels that the Creator gives and that He receives, and shame grows and compels a person to do all kinds of things only so as not to be ashamed. That's why Bala Sulam writes in his Tikkun Pnimit, Part 1, that shame is something reserved for high souls. It's not like a person is ashamed on the street. With respect to the Creator, this sensation is burning. It doesn't allow a person to remain relaxed, but he has to complement it, he has to correct himself in order to not be ashamed. And not being ashamed means giving back to the giver. There's no other way. So that brings one to correction, to eventually resemble the giver, the Creator. So actually, shame is the means for prompting us to being like Him. It's a very beneficial thing, very good thing. But how do we come to feel it? If a person is willing to feel shame in order to correct himself and understands that otherwise his will to receive will not want to correct itself unless it feels shame and is ashamed of itself, then that person is awarded a revelation to the extent that is willing to tolerate the shame and reaches tikkun, correction. And this happens gradually because you can't disclose the gap between the entire gap between the giver and the receiver. We wouldn't be able to stand it. It is so degrading. It erases a person that we would just burn from within, literally. All kinds of shames that we feel in our world are complete nothing compared to what you feel when the true giver appears. The one who has no need and no interest or need for you, he simply loves you. And when you discover that there is nothing to give back and you cannot cover the shame, you cannot compliment it, how do you do it? He doesn't need it. Then a very special relationship evolves here, which is called the spiritual world, the spiritual forces and spiritual relationships. We still have to discover it. In our world, we complement shame by giving something back to the one who gives me. The giver is an egoist. He's also got an ego, just like I have an ego. I feel myself as receiving from him. So through some kind of action, either in speech or in act, I compliment, I give back, I somehow determine maybe another kind of relationships. He's a friend of mine. I give him afterwards, beforehand, somehow. In the end, I have to put myself in a situation where whatever I get from him, at least that much he gets back. But if the Creator, who doesn't receive anything from me, doesn't need anything from me, how do I build the relationship? What does it mean to receive in order to bestow? Bestow what? So here, when we discover his love, he shows his love, and his love becomes to me the kli, the vessel. Because if he loves me, then I can give to that attribute. Well, that's ahead of us. But for now, Parah Sulam explains how these things happen in us and bring us to Gmar Tikkun. Item 8. It is much like a rich man who takes a man from the market and feeds him and gives him gold and silver and all desirables every day. And each day he showers him with more than the with more gifts than the day before. Finally, the rich man asks, "Do tell me, have your wishes all been fulfilled?" And the man from the market replies, "Not yet. For how pleasant and wonderful it would be if all those possessions and precious things came to me through my own work, as they came to you. And I would not be receiving the charity of your hand." The rich man told him then, in that case, there has never been born a person who could satisfy your wishes. Meaning, this poor man feels that he is filled with pleasures. He has got no desires that are not filled yet, fulfilled. They're all fulfilled completely. And when all of them are fulfilled, you feel in those desires a deficiency that cannot be fulfilled and satisfied through reception. On the contrary, the reception causes the creation of this additional deficiency called shame. If I hadn't been a receiver, I wouldn't be ashamed. So now the question is, either I stop receiving and I'll be left in pain, and then I remain in deficit, and my rich friend is in deficit too. He wants to give me. He loves me. So what can I do? If I don't receive, I suffer, and he suffers. So if I think only of myself, at the very least, I stop receiving. If I start thinking not only about my own shame, but I also have sparks of bestowal, then I think how much I cause him sorrow when I don't receive from him. It's a much greater pain that I feel. He wants to give from the bottom of his heart, and because I do not want to suffer, because I'm an egoist, I cause him sorrow. To begin with, he wants to do me good. He wants to fulfill me. Meaning, his desire for me is for my own good, so to speak, to satisfy me, to give me what I want. Meaning, he wants to give me pleasure. With my action, when I stop receiving pleasure, I cause him harm. Meaning, he relates to me positively, and I, with my action, relate to him negatively. If I start making these calculations, then I already have a problem. So what should I do? That is why the situation, the state of Tzimtzum Aleph is called a very grave thing. because the kli detaches itself and says, I don't receive anymore. Why? Because I'm ashamed. It's as if you throw the fulfillment back to the Creator. Yes, I don't need your favors if they make me feel bad, seemingly that way. And then it says immediately, Kabbalists explain, that Tzimtzum Aleph, the first restriction, happened because of a desire for greater dvikut, adhesion. It's not that I get rid of the feeling because I feel bad. I want, on top of the sensations that I have now, to cling to the giver even more. But for that to happen, I stop the reception of abundance, and now I want to arrange such a relationship between us that I'll receive everything from you and will give you pleasure by enjoying. Because if you love me and you want my happiness, then you give me pleasure on the one hand, on the other hand, you give me pain, shame. So now I'll build a relationship between us in such a way that you will enjoy giving me, in that you do not cause me shame, but through the sensation of shame, I can bring you additional pleasure. So, because in the creature there are two contradicting sensations, from love, from fulfillment, they enable the creature to grow. It is a natural thing, because on the one hand, he experiences great pleasure, and he enjoys them more and more, as the rich man showers the gifts upon him. But on the other hand, it is hard for him to tolerate the shame at the excessive goodness that the rich bestows upon him. That is because there is a natural law that the receiver feels shame and impatience upon receiving free gifts from the giver out of compassion and pity. From here extends the second law, that never will anyone be able to satisfy the needs of his friend to the fullest, because ultimately he cannot give him the nature and the shape of self-possession, that only with it the desired perfection is obtained. Meaning, if the Creator is at a higher level and the creature is at a lower level, like the rich and the poor, the gap between them, between those states, must be the sensation of this gap. The shame must be the motivation for the creature to correct itself in such a way that it'll reach the actual degree of the Creator. Meaning, there is nothing better than the shame. It's terrible to feel it. And along the way, the more we grow in spirituality, the Creator gives us such shames. In the beginning, He does it. He gives us shames in the eyes of the world, and then with respect to ourselves and with respect to the world. But actually, the sensation of shame is always the sensation that is most beneficial for progress and evolution of a person, because it acts directly against one's will to receive, and one understands immediately how and with what he must not engage, and how he is permitted to work in order to progress without the sensation of shame. So the shame is like a shield. It's irreplaceable. It's an irreplaceable means. It stands right vis-a-vis the ego. Shame and ego are in the same kli. Yes, the receiving kli. And they support each other reciprocally. The ego is me, the self that stands unique, alone, and besides me, everyone don't exist. Yeah, well, they exist to the extent that they have to serve me, but only that. Actually, only I exist. That's the law of the ego. And shame is the complete opposite. I'm worse than everyone, less than them. Everyone's above me. When these two things meet in a person, shame and pride, in that place between them, in the encounter, the friction between them, is exactly the time and the place for creating the new kelim, the new vessels. But that relates only to the creatures, whereas regarding the Creator, it is completely impossible and unacceptable. And that is the reason He has prepared for us the toil and trouble of Torah and Mitzvot to produce the exaltedness by ourselves. Because then the delight and pleasure that come to us from Him, meaning everything that is included in the adhesion with Him, would all be our own possessions that have come to us through our own efforts. Then we would feel ourselves as the owners, without which there cannot be a sensation of wholeness. Meaning, through the sensation of shame, we can correct the will to receive, turn it to work in such a way that our reception will be as bestowal, and in that way, well, we seemingly work to neutralize the shame, but afterwards, through the sensation of shame, we start feeling what stands opposite it, what bestowal means. What does shame do to me? Yes? He is greater than me. And I can't stand it. I have to be at least as great as Him. So I start studying from the greater one who causes me the sensation of shame, how to be like Him. And thus, I constantly, the creature can constantly learn from the Creator what it means to be a giver. It's just like that poor man who says, I can receive everything from you, but I want to be like you in terms of action, because otherwise I'm ashamed that it doesn't give me pleasure to receive from you. So, every feeling a greater and greater shame every time is necessary in order to make corrections and reach the complete form of bestowal. The only difference is that bestowal and shame that we feel in this world and how we complement each other is different from spirituality. In the intensity of the shame, of course, and in its manner. But he gives an example. And from the example, we should somehow picture the spiritual situation, meaning the Creator vis-a-vis the creature. Yes, it's not a person that you can tell him, thank you very much, and, you know, publicize the favors he'd done to you, and then you indirectly satisfy his pride because he too has this ego, he's an egoist too. But you're dealing with a Creator who has no need for himself. And then it's very difficult to make this arrangement, yes? How I give him what he gives to me. Here it is seemingly impossible. So what's the solution? The solution is to feel in the Creator that His love is huge, unbounded on the one hand. On the other hand, it depends on your enjoyment. And that's the problem. In an egoistic person, it is not felt so much in the giver or in the receiver. But because the Creator wants your benefit and your pleasure, your delight, you can build such a relationship, such a reciprocal relationship, where if I enjoy, he enjoys. So by that I can, if I restrict my enjoyment for self, and continue to enjoy only because he enjoys it, by that I enable him to open up his love, to realize it, and by that I become the giver. So it turns out that a person doesn't change anything in reality outside of his own kelim, meaning outside of his own attitude. He restricts his kelim, stops receiving, and determines my reception will be only with intention, my attitude to reception, which is all because you enjoy giving me. My pleasure is so that you will enjoy me. And by that, they reach completeness and equality, what we call dvikut. These are profound things that we cannot see them. That's why spirituality, this relationship, is hidden from us. Yes? Item 9. Indeed, we need to examine the heart and source of that natural law, and who it is who fathered the flaw of shame and impatience that we feel upon receiving charity from anyone. It is understood from a law, which scientists know, that each branch bears the same nature as its root, and that all the conducts of the roots, the branch also desires, seeks, and craves. And against them, all the conducts that are not in the root, its branch distances itself from, and cannot tolerate them, and is harmed by them. This law is found between each root and branch, and cannot be breached. Meaning, to begin with, the Creator gave us, besides the will to receive, He also gave us the ability to sensation the quality of what we enjoy, that we enjoy sublime things. We enjoy greatness, wisdom, the nobility, freedom, something that is sublime. He, in our will to receive, didn't just say, enjoy the fulfillment, but enjoy the manner of fulfillment. And then we have a complex kli. It enjoys things that are seemingly higher than itself. It's called the kli, enjoying the light. What's the light? The light is not, we don't know what the light is. Something fills my kli, happens in my desires. It's as if something happens in my nerves, in my biological system, some, I don't know, acids or electricity, and I feel pleasure about it. The sensation of pleasure is something that is above me, that I lack. And then, in it, there's already the need to reach the root of the pleasure rooted in it. It's called enjoying things that are found in the Creator. We don't just enjoy some a different kind of tranquility, but we enjoy only attributes that are in Him. One, unique, unified, wise, almighty, eternal, etc. These things, or even coming close to these things, brings us pleasures. Meaning, within the pleasure, there's already the conditions of the upper one rooted, by which we are certain that when we feel them, we will want him. It's called the root of law and branch, that what is found in the root, the branch loves. Yes. ומכאן נפתח לנו פתח להבין מקור כללות התענוגים והיסורים הקבועים בעולמנו. Now, here opens before us a door to understand the source of all the pleasures and pains that abide in this world. Since the Lord is the root of his creations, all that abides in him and extends to us directly from him, we feel is pleasant and delightful, because our nature is close to our roots. Conducts that do not abide in him and do not extend directly from him, according to the polarity of creation itself, will be against our nature and difficult for us to tolerate. For example, we love to rest and hate to move so much that we do not make a single move if it is not for the attainment of rest. That is because our root is immobile, but at constant rest, and no motion exists in him. God forbid. Therefore, it is hated by us and goes against our nature too. By the same token, we love wisdom, strength, and wealth, because all those abide in him who is our root. And therefore, we hate their opposites, such as foolishness, weakness, and poverty, because they do not abide in him, which makes us hate and hurt intolerably. שזהו עושה את הרגשתנו מאוס ושנו וגם גורם מכאובים לאין סבול. כן. Yes. האם בשורש שלנו אנחנו עצלנים? Are we lazy in our roots? As he writes, according to what he writes?
איפה כתוב?
What does it say? According to what I understand. Ah, because he's at rest? Yes, no, motionless at rest. No, that's not idleness. It's not laziness. It's something else. Rest means wholeness. It doesn't come on top of a deficiency, but it's completeness when there's no need for anything. There's no need for anything. There's nothing more to correct. That's why it's called rest. Now, when a person reaches the end of all the corrections, he very much wants to correct everything. He corrected even the last hardest phase. And suddenly discovers that there's nothing more to do. For him, rest, is it good or bad? He has to take a tranquilizer. He wants to correct more, but there's nothing more to correct. Right? So it's as if there's an opposite state here. The Creator is at rest means that he is in a state of completeness. Rest is a result of absence of deficiencies. Motion comes to complement the lack. Where does motion come in anything? In spirituality or corporeality? In the still, inanimate, in the animate, in the vegetative, in anything. It's always when there's not something more here and something less there. So then you have pressures. Pressures might be in influencing each other physically or mentally or emotionally. It doesn't matter how. In all the laws of physics, you have greater pressure and lesser pressure, and the difference between them causes motion. And in people too, now I feel bad, and I imagine a situation where I will feel better. So, I move toward that better state. If I did not see a better state, I would remain in my own situation, suffering without, well, unable to do anything. Because the Creator is in a state of completeness and doesn't have these gaps, he's completely in the attribute of bestowal. He's the total attribute of bestowal. That's why he's considered to be in a state of complete rest. What about us? Idleness means that I feel that I'm suffering. If I'm suffering, why am I not moving? Because in order to move, I need fuel. The fuel comes by seeing myself in one situation compared to another situation. And the difference between state 1 and state 2, let's say it's 10 grams of suffering. If I approach state 2 from my own state A, then I will benefit. I'll get 10 grams of pleasure and will not feel the suffering that I do now. So now my question is this: how much do I have to waste on it? Energy and fuel and all that. If it is less than the pleasure that I get, it's worth paying. I'm gaining, or at least I'm balanced. But if I think that I will waste more than I will, than the tranquility and rest and pleasure that I'll get, then I stay motionless. That's laziness. Laziness is when I calculate that motion is not worth it. But the calculation is correct. So laziness isn't a bad attribute. I wish we were lazy. We would cause less mess in the world. But if I see motion toward a better state, and it appears to me, it appears difficult to me, so I weigh how much pleasure will I get compared to the energy that I'll waste. So here, I can increase the goal, make it more respectable in my eyes, so much so that it'll be worthwhile for me to invest in it, to make an effort. If it is a spiritual goal and I don't see it, then how will I then not be lazy? Let's say instead of once a week, I'll come to study every morning. I don't see that spiritual state as so important. I don't feel the profits in it. We call it laziness, but it's not laziness. It's correct and accurate calculation that a person makes, but he should calculate something else, yes? What is eventually worth it? Would it be good if I had the energy for it? Would I benefit from it? I would. So what do I take the greatness of the goal from? So that I will feel that I'm losing not 10 grams, but 1,000 tons. And of course I'll run forward. That's how we make every calculation in life. So I need to increase the importance of the goal so that the pleasure I get when I reach it will be plus 10 tons. Where do I take it if I don't see the spiritual goal? For that, I need a group. The group advertises, brainwashes me to tell me that it's important, just like everything else I see in life. My environment gives me the values of everything. What's more important, what's less important, I'm addicted to it. I work my whole life to chase things that are important in the eyes of society that I was told and brought up to. think. So if I enter the right group, that gives me a greater appreciation of the real goal, the eternal one, then I gain, I benefit. I don't sit idle anymore, but I go and get the goal. But to begin with, the calculations are always true. Laziness isn't just a lazy person, it's just a person with lack of importance of the goal. One wants to be a professor, and another wants to sell, I don't know, watermelons in the market. That's it. It's all about the importance of the goal. Start working on a guy who doesn't want more than to sell watermelons. Start working on him, start brainwashing him, telling him what it means to be a great scientist or a special person, and you'll see he won't stay in the market. It's all a question of the environment and how the environment appreciates things. Why? Because that person doesn't see. That person doesn't see what it means to be a great scientist. Well, you know, I'm better off this way. Watermelon, football, beer, and couch. It's enough. But if you brainwash him, he'll chase another goal. That's how it is in spirituality, too. It's no different. The calculations are the same. That's why society is a corporal society. It's only the society that I'm impressed with determines my whole life. Either I'm like everybody else, or I really do obtain connection with godliness. Only the social environment. That's why after the article Matan Torah, the revelation of godliness, comes the article the Yovut, the bond. The Ovut, the mutual guarantee, is about how one influences the other and everyone influences everybody else to make the spiritual goal the most important. If they all commit to build for me, that's sort of a picture compared to which everything else will be completely, well, nothing. That's the Ovut. That's the guarantee. It's my insurance. That I will reach the end of the way. That's the condition. And laziness, simple laziness is a good thing. It's written, sit and do nothing is better. Baal Sulam also says that all the bad things happen because people do unimportant things, needless things, yes? If we had said and thought 5,000 years ago, what will allow us to evolve? Technology, physics, biology, society, politics, what will that give me? Will it give me eternity, completeness, joy? What's it going to give me? If we could, in advance, determine that we don't need it, that we need to develop internally in order to reach happiness, would we then need these lives, these incarnations, over the past 5,000 years? So sit and think. That's better. Well, item 10. Idleness pertains to not rushing the calculations. Yes. We do have to rush them. Item 10. That is which gives us the foul taste of shame and impatience when we receive from others by way of charity, because in the Creator there isn't, God forbid, anything such as reception of favors, because from whom can He receive? And because that element does not exist in our roots, we feel it as repulsive and loathsome. On the other hand, we feel delight and pleasure with every bestowal we bestow upon others, since that conduct abides in our roots, which is benevolent. Item 11. Now we have found a way to scrutinize the purpose of creation, which is adhesion with Him in its true appearance. This exaltedness and adhesion, which is guaranteed to come to us through our work in Torah and Mitzvot, is no more and no less than the equivalence of the branches with their root, from which every gentleness and pleasure and sublimity becomes a natural extension, as we have said above, that pleasure is only in the equivalence of form with the Maker. And when we equalize every conduct that is in our root, we sense delight, and everything that is not in our root becomes intolerable, disgusting, and considerably painful to us. And we naturally find that our very hope depends on the extent of our equivalence with our root.
אשר כל תקוותנו תלויה ועומדת בשיעור השוואת צורתנו לשורשנו יתברך ויתעלה.
זאת אומרת, בצורה הטבעית, שהאור ברא,
naturally, when the light creates the will to receive, the will to receive enjoys the light. What is in the light, what is in bestowal, what is in the Creator. So that is why we have no choice. If we want to reach completeness of the desire, completeness of love, of pleasures, completeness of the creature, and so as not to feel any lack, so we have no choice but to acquire all the attributes in the light. That's called the reaching equivalence of form with Him and to cleave unto Him. It seems to us that we can enjoy the influence of the world, the giving of the light to us, and not the attributes that in the light. That's the problem. That's why we constantly say, give me, give me, give me, give me, and we're never fulfilled. If we did not want Him to give me, but His attribute to be in me, that would fulfill me. There are two things in the light. It's giving and its inner attribute. With its inner attribute, it created me, and that is the only thing that can fulfill me. That's our psychological problem, which we can't understand, and that's why we are always empty. As much as we are fulfilled, we always remain empty. In order to discover the inner attribute, we need a clothing over it called returning life. But we'll talk about it next time. That completes our lesson. We thank all our viewers. Have a good day and good night.